Warning, the podcast you're about to listen to may contain graphic descriptions of violent assaults, murder, and adult language. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Murder Police Podcast, Forensic Pathology with Dr. Greg Davis, Part 3 of 3. Greg, I was going to ask, you know, you talk about, and I don't want to dive into it to relive bad memories for you, but
that's okay.
You know, you talked about the cases that haunt you. And I think much like I mentioned a few moments ago, there are those things that you just can't get out of your head, for lack of better terms. For you, are the cases that haunt you, are those the cases of brutal death, or what is it for you that just, when you walk in that day and you know that's what you're facing, or when you walk in that room, what is it for you that you think, I'm going to do it, but this isn't my preferred day?
You know, I think I'll start off generally, Wendy, that one of my mentors, Dr. McLeod, who I mentioned earlier, told me 35 years ago, I still remember, he said, son, it'll get technically easier and emotionally more difficult as the years go by. And boy, oh boy, was that true. I think early on, your learning curve is so steep and everything is, I'm doing air quotes, everything is cool because you're seeing it for the first time. And then over the years, you see patterns and you see patterns repeated. So I think the things that upset me the most are the patterns of people, disempowered people being victimized. You know, the kids, the elders, you know, people who can't fight back. I mean, every death is a tragedy to some degree. But, you know, there's obviously a difference between, you know, a 90-year-old who's surrounded by friends and family and who slips peacefully away versus somebody who is untimely ripped from this world. I mean, one thing that I think about a lot is a case from very early in my career, probably 2 or 3 months after I finished training. I was a new medical examiner in Winston-Salem and just getting established. And I get a call from an outlying county sheriff's detective who says, we have a murder outside this Country Western bar. And he starts to give me details. And I was a newbie. So with some reluctance, I called my senior colleague, the fellow who'd hired me, who was gracious and always glad for me to wake him up in the middle of the night, which as a cop or a doc, you got to be. And I said, Pat, you know, I've got this case, and can we use expletives on podcasts?
Yeah, we can if they're, yeah.
So basically, as I'm explaining the case, I hear my colleague say, oh, shit. And the reason he said that was the MO of the murder that I was describing to him as I was getting ready to go out to the scene was the same as one he had about 6 months before from another Country Western bar. Long story short, we actually were onto a serial killer at that point who was a long distance trucker on I-40 between North Carolina and California, who specifically picked out women in Country Western bars of a particular body habitus and a particular type of speech impediment. That was his preferred profiled victim. Probably would not be reproducible now, but at his murder trial in North Carolina, my colleague and I essentially put on a comparison and contrast slideshow of the victim at hand with the previous victim to show that this was a pattern for this guy. And he's still in prison. It's interesting, you know, no matter what you or your listeners think of the death penalty, the other thing that haunts me about this case is he told the prosecutor, if you take death off the table, quote, I'll tell you about all the others, end quote. And for whatever reason, in the early 90s, the prosecutor wasn't willing to do that. So one of the things that's haunted me is how many other families are there out there who have missing loved ones who could have at least some sort of resolution to that uncertainty. I don't use the word closure, and I'll tell you why. Resolution to that uncertainty, and they can't because this guy's refusing to talk because he's on death row. Closure, whether it's applied, you know, I use this for myself too. I don't like that word because I think it connotes a finality. And if there's one thing I've learned just from being in my 60s and losing family members and friends, it's that you don't, again, with the air quotes, you don't get over anything. It just becomes a part of who you are. And the best analogy I ever heard, a friend of mine who's an MD, PhD in New York, and her PhD is in English, talks about you don't have closure, you metabolize loss. It becomes a part, again, a part of who you are. I've never, when I hear folks say, well, the family needs the autopsy results for closure, I always do a gentle course correction and say, well, no, they need the autopsy results so they can figure out what happened and figure out what to do with that information going forward. But I think we have this particular cultural sickness in North America where we think we have to get over everything and just put it behind us and move on. And I don't think that's what humans really do.
I don't think I've met a surviving victim's family that does. And it's a long process, and there's cathartic pieces to it, speaking of that person. And that's one reason we started the podcast, and we're going to start pretty soon, is I'm going to start into more of the missings believed to be murdered and victim families, mainly to give them a platform to talk about who they lost. That's an important part, is to be able to speak to that. One thing that that I want to touch on that you hit that impressed me is the conversation you had, that where you had that epiphany that you were working on that same MO, is again, that can't happen without a relationship with somebody. I mean, I know people are going to be, my God, that's all they talk about on the show, but it's true. If you don't, because I think people out in the lay world believe that there's this big master database, and there's things like ViaCap, but it never gets that specific. But the importance of having that conversation to be able to say, oh, wow, because otherwise it'd get lost. I can tell you, too, that I interviewed people in the interview room more than once that we probably charged with a murder or two. But and I've always tried to tell people that when you meet one, that the silicone switch definitely went to overload. Is I've had people before that have left that room, and you just have that feeling that their capacity for doing this before is real. And you can't – that was just always a lingering thing for me, is I met a few people, the knee to knee, that I had no doubt that this was not their first time at the rodeo. And but you couldn't scratch that, and that always bothered me. And what the unanswered questions that are going to remain with that are frightening, actually. Good stuff. Well, I tell you what, I remember offline we talked a little bit, and as we kind of come around to the bend on this, before we talk about your podcast, because I want to make sure people are aware of this, as I mentioned that when we used to come to the autopsy suite, there was a sign over the door, and if you could tell us what that is and what it means and how it speaks to the profession, because that's all I've thought about since you agreed to do this show, was that saying.
Well, there's a Latin saying that's chiseled in stone, literally over the entrance to the medical examiner's office in New York City on First Avenue. And we have it printed on paper at the medical examiner's office in Frankfurt. And the saying is, let conversation cease, let laughter flee. This is where death is gratified to help the living. And I always modify that when I talk to people for the first time about it, is it's a very somber statement in some ways, and I always push back on it, because conversation should flourish appropriately in the autopsy room, and even appropriate laughter, again, never directed at the patient who's dead and can't fight back. But if, you know, David Lyons and Greg Davis want to rib each other, that's, you know, have at it, that's fine. But this is where death is gratified to help the living. I think we have one shot at a scene investigation and at an autopsy to do it right the first time. And I'm sure your listeners have heard about second autopsies. My experience over 3.5 decades is, and this is probably axiomatic, they're never as good as the first as far as the material that you're dealing with. You know, the person doing it may be able to interpret things really well, but to do a scene investigation or an autopsy right, dotting I's, crossing T's the first time, that's really the best thing that you can do to honor that deceased person and to let death help the living.
The roar of a lion forces Savannah to choose if she'll save her classmates or be the next featured story on the Murder Police podcast. Hi, I'm Christine Meyer, author of The Too Tall Giraffe, a children's book about looking different, fitting in, and finding your superpower. After 20 years with the NYPD, I now help kids embrace their differences, fit in, or not, and find their superpowers. You can learn more at thetootallgiraffe.com.
Again, whether it's to make sure a bad guy goes away or make sure an innocent person doesn't get accused. You mentioned that line on the kid that folks thought was trauma. I mean, we see that in pediatric cases, you know, a little melanin spots in the small of the back that somebody thinks is a bruise when actuality in darker pigmented kids, it's a common finding just to have a patch of dark skin right there in the small of the back. And to be able to educate that new cop or that new lawyer that it's actually the opposite of most popular entertainment, where how many shows have you watched where it looked like a natural death, but really grandpa was murdered? Well, in most of our cases, those that come to us initially suspicious end up being something quite innocent. But there's a saying in forensics that's meant to be figurative, not literal. Quote, it's a homicide till proven otherwise, end quote. That was never meant to be taken literally. All that means is, okay, grandma had cancer and heart disease, and she looks like she's peaceful in her bed. But as a scene investigator, I'm still going to talk to the family. I'm still going to take some pictures. I'm going to roll her over to make sure there's no holes back there. That's happened before. Knife wound. And just to make sure we dot those I's and cross those T's, because once the scene is cleaned up, it's gone. But yeah, I think that quote, this is where death is gratified to help the living, comes back again and again to what we've been talking about the whole time, which is it's not about the autopsy. The autopsy is a means to an end. It's a tool. It's a lab test. It's what you do with that information for public health, for criminal justice, for the civil world. That's where it really counts. And I mean, for those of you that have kids who are on swing sets and you see that the swing set is put in concrete so it doesn't tip over, you can thank a forensic pathologist in Rhode Island in the 60s for that, who noticed a lot of head injuries in kids from swing sets. Modified body armor over the last 20 years with our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere. It was medical examiners at Dover, Delaware, at the Armed Forces Medical Examiner's Office, who saw injury patterns and informed their superiors and manufacturers of body armor to modify to prevent certain types of injuries. Car seats for kids, the back to sleep campaign, all of these are societal and other issues that have come out of doing a good forensic pathology exam and a good death investigation to help the living.
And so it means a lot more than walking in that room and writing a report.
Right.
That's pretty groovy. That's pretty good. Well, I'll tell you, before we head out, I know that you do a podcast of your own. And if you can tell us what the podcast is and where people can find it, and we'll put links in our show notes to direct people to it, because I know that as long as I've known you, this has been an eye-opening, fascinating conversation this morning. Learned more than I ever did, and I'm sure that people are going to have an interest in what you've got to say on the medical field as a whole. So what is the name of the podcast, and how can we find it?
Well, thank you for bringing that up. It's called Dr. Greg Davis on Medicine. It's on WUKY, which is an NPR affiliate radio station here at the University of Kentucky. Been doing it for about 15 years or so. Started out, I've always been a big fan of public radio since I was in college. I was volunteering 15 or so years ago during a pledge drive, answering phones, taking money, taking pledges. And the news director came in and said, aren't you a physician? And I got really frightened for a second, thinking I was going to have to resuscitate somebody. And she said, no, we just need a medical reporter. So it evolved into this weekly broadcast and podcast that I'll send you the link to. And the thing I love about it is anything to do with medicine, health, wellness, everything from facets of the COVID-19 pandemic to why doctors in the United Kingdom, male physicians don't wear neckties anymore because they are called fomites. They can drag germs from person to person. And how often do we launder our neckties? So it's the reason you see a lot of male physicians who choose to wear neckties, either wearing a bow tie or doing that military tuck, you know, of putting the tie in between their second and third button so that it doesn't, you know, as they're leaning over the patient in the hospital bed, the tie doesn't drag a germ from one patient to another. I've interviewed my wife, who's a registered dietitian, about nutrition and dietetics, just anything that has to do with health. And so I've had full artistic license to engage in that. And it's been a real eye-opener. I've met so many wonderful folks from UK and around the world. A surgeon in Germany who plays piano for his patients because he's a firm believer in the healing power of music. I've interviewed someone from Japan about Shinrin Yoku, which is forest bathing, how getting out into nature can help us feel better about life. So I would love if folks gave a listen, and I'm always open to suggestions for topics too.
Oh, I'm sure they were. I know we will be.
Yeah, very neat. You know, I'm sitting here as germy as I get. You know, I work with children for a living, and way before COVID was even a thing, I always, you know, David will tell, we go into restaurants and I'm getting extra napkins to pick up salt shakers with and ketchup because I refuse to touch bottles. And I've always been this way. And as you're talking about the neckties, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, that's right. Because you don't wash neckties. I never thought, I mean, a female, you don't wear neckties. And I'm just sitting here thinking, wow, somebody else who's like me, who doesn't like germs and doesn't want to touch stuff. And so, yeah, I can't wait to give it a listen and share with our listeners who are looking for a good podcast that's not always crime related.
Yeah, a funny story on the tie before we close out too is that that's one thing I learned in the unit is that when you go under a scene with advanced decomp, you leave your tie in the car. You know, because it you know, the rest of the stuff you're going to throw in a laundry, but yeah, that tie will hold on to that for a while. That was just stupid. It sounds dumb, but people who know. Is that you don't take those into adults
because those cases are hard enough without accidentally dragging a tie through them.
Yeah.
If I can tell a story on myself.
Yes, please.
Brand new detective in Louisville 35 years ago. Now I think he's retired. I think he ended up being like associate chief or something like that in the Louisville Police Department. But I think it was his first homicide, and it was a decomp case. And I'd been doing autopsies for maybe all of 2 months. And so being the wannabe Papa Bear that I am, I introduced myself to him and told him, you know, we're not macho here. If you feel sick or anything like that, sit down. Nobody's going to make fun of you. And lo and behold, when we opened the body, I was hit square in the face with some of the decompositional gases that can be quite pungent, as you know. And I turned, yanked my mask down and got sick into a trash can that was right next to the autopsy table. And this detective, without even cracking up laughing or cracking a smile, came over, put his arms around my shoulders and says, "It's okay, doc. None of us is macho here and we're not going to make fun of you." And he became, I love that guy, you know, after that. And we sort of bonded over that experience together.
The teacher became the student that day, didn't he?
Absolutely. And, you know, Wendy, that's one of the greatest things about this. I mean, one of the reasons I love being in an academic environment as well is you don't know the background of that third year or fourth year medical student. They may, you know, for all you know, they may have life experience that's going to really flesh out a case for you. And or something as mundane as, "Hey, Dr. Davis, did you mean to dictate right? I think that was on his left," you know. Again, having multiple people around and checks and balances and perspectives is always helpful.
Good teamwork, a little dose of humility, and life goes along pretty well.
Amen.
Works good. Well, Greg, thanks a bunch. Thanks for hoaxness here in the facility. I mean, I have podcast world travel kind of thing. We were glad to come out. Maybe down the road, we, you know, like we said, we do have the Murder Police podcast studio in Nick Vegas or in Jessamine County out at the farm. And then maybe we can come out there and do some more, because there's going to be some other topics we'd like to scratch with you specific to this kind of work. But thanks a whole bunch.
Oh, it's been my pleasure and honor, David and Wendy, anytime. And I would love to come to the studio sometime and talk more anytime.
Oh, yeah. And you have to visit the miniature horses. We call them therapy animals for Bill Brislin, but that's a whole different story. but thank you again.
Bill alone. Yes, thank you for taking time out of your very busy day to talk to us. And now that we're off air, I'm going to pick your brain a little bit. And but thank you, Greg, so much. David will attest, when I first met you, I've been saying for years, I'm going to get home alone and ask a bunch of questions. I've been saying that for years now. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And again, listeners, please look at our notes to get Greg's podcast. Give it a listen. Share it with others. And with that, thank you, Greg.
Thank you, Wendy. Thank you, David.
The Murder Police Podcast is hosted by Wendy and David Lyons and was created to honor the lives of crime victims so their names are never forgotten. It is produced, recorded, and edited by David Lyons. The Murder Police Podcast can be found on your favorite Apple or Android podcast platform, as well as at murderpolicepodcast.com, which is our website and has show notes for imagery and audio and video files related to the cases you're going to hear. We are also on Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, LinkedIn, and YouTube, which has closed caption available for those that are hearing impaired. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe for more and give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcast or wherever you download your podcast from. Subscribe to the Murder Police Podcast and set your player to automatically download new episodes so you get the new ones as soon as they drop. And please, tell your friends. Lock it down, Judy.